Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Alice Bryant. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, more pipe bombs targeting members of the Democratic Party and a critic of U.S. President Donald Trump were discovered Thursday. Investigators found three more pipe bombs, one sent to actor Robert De Niro and the others to former Vice President Joe Biden. They said the devices were similar to the pipe bombs sent this week to former President Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and CNN television. The package found at CNN was addressed to John Brennan, a fierce critic of Trump and a former director of intelligence under Obama. Others were sent to businessman George Soros, a longtime Democratic Party supporter, and Representative Maxine Waters, a Democrat from California. One package mailed to former Attorney General Eric Holder, who served under Obama, was returned to the office of Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She was a former chair of the Democratic Party. Actor Robert De Niro has long been a vocal critic of President Trump. At the Tony Awards in June, the actor used an obscenity to insult the president. Former Vice President Joe Biden has denounced Trump while campaigning for Democrats around the country. None of the devices exploded, and no one was injured. But the packages sent to Democrats and critics of the president raised tensions before the November 6th midterm elections. The recipients of the pipe bombs have long been targets of the president's supporters. A conservative talk show host even questioned whether someone who opposed Trump sent the bombs. On Wednesday, President Donald Trump condemned the attempted bombings and said, "Acts or threats of political violence have no place in the United States." But Democratic Senate and House leaders Chuck Schumer of New York and Nancy Pelosi of California said Trump's words ring hollow. In other words, the lawmakers suggest Trump's words do not mean much because he supports violence in other ways. They noted the president's support for the congressman who body slammed a reporter, the neo-Nazis who killed a young woman in Charlottesville, his supporters at rallies who get violent with protesters, dictators around the world who murder their own citizens, and referring to the free press as the enemy of the people. An official told the Associated Press the bombs seized on Wednesday were about 15 centimeters long and packed with powder and broken glass. The official said the devices were made from plastic pipe and covered with black tape. Law enforcement officials said all the packages were similar. They came in brown envelopes with six stamps and the return address of Democratic lawmaker Debbie Wasserman Schultz. All the devices were sent to an FBI lab in Virginia to be studied. Officials provided no details on a possible suspect or motive.
The Russian Military Intelligence Service, GRU, is not as famous as other Russian government agencies, like the KGB or the FSB. But the GRU has been getting more attention as other countries accuse it of launching secretive and deadly operations. The latest accusation came earlier this month from Britain, when the government identified two Russian men as GRU agents. It blamed them for nerve agent poisonings earlier this year in Salisbury, England. The official name of the Military Intelligence Service is the Main Directorate of the General Staff of the Armed Forces. However, the agency is usually known by its former acronym. The GRU is the most secret of Russia's secret services. When its former director, Igor Surgon, died in 2016, the official announcement was so short that it failed to give the date, place, or cause of death. The agency appears to have many responsibilities. The Russian Defense Ministry website says its job is to aid with the success of the Russian Federation by giving the government the intelligence it needs to make decisions in the political, economic, defense, scientific, technical, and environmental areas. Britain claims that two GRU operatives carried out the nerve agent attack in Salisbury on former GRU officer Sergei Skripal and his daughter. Both survived the poisoning. 3 months later, two people who lived nearby became sick from the nerve agent. One died. Investigators believe they found the container that carried the poison used in Skripal's attack. The claim came less than 2 months after the United States announced charges against 12 suspected GRU agents. They were accused of hacking into the election campaign of presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party in 2016. U.S. officials say the GRU released tens of thousands of private communications as part of the Russian plan to interfere in the 2016 elections. This year, the investigative group Bellingcat reported that a GRU officer was responsible for operations in eastern Ukraine in July 2014. At that time, Russia supported separatist forces that were fighting Ukrainian forces. 298 people were killed when a Malaysian passenger airplane flying over the area was shot down. The GRU is part of Russia's large security and intelligence system, which includes the Foreign Intelligence Service, known as the SVR. It also includes the Federal Security Service, or FSB, which gathers intelligence both in Russia and overseas. The SVR and FSB were once part of the KGB. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, they became their own organizations. Pavel Felgenhauer, an independent military expert, told the Associated Press that the SVR stays away from military intelligence, and the GRU stays away from political intelligence. He said that if both sides keep this divide, they do not have to share information. In the case of U.S. election-related hacking, Felgenhauer said he believes the services worked together. I'm Susan Shand.
If you asked even the most knowledgeable Americans, they probably could not tell you more than a few meanings for the word so. It is an everyday word that most people use without even realizing its complexity. But this mysterious little word can act as an adverb, pronoun, or conjunction with many meanings as each. In all, there are more than 25 meanings for so. That's one powerful word. Today, we will tell you about three phrases that English learners have trouble with. So, so that, and so adjective or adverb that. We'll discuss each one, then compare them. Let's start with so as a coordinating conjunction, a word that joins two or more things, such as sentences or words. When used in this way, it means therefore or for that reason. For this meaning, so joins two complete sentences and shows the result of something in the second sentence. Take a listen.
The apartment was too hot, so we opened the window.
The first sentence provides the action or situation. The apartment was too hot. It is joined by so to the second sentence, which explains the resulting action, opening the window. Okay, now we move to so that, a phrase that begins adverb clauses. You may recall that an adverb clause shows a relationship between two actions. It joins a main clause or complete sentence to a dependent clause or incomplete sentence and shows how they relate. So that means in order to, which answers the question why. We use it to begin adverb clauses of purpose. Let's hear an example.
It helps to lower blood sugar so that you feel less hungry.
The adverb clause is so that you feel less hungry. It shows the purpose for the action in the main clause. Why does it help to lower blood sugar? To feel less hungry. So that can also come at the beginning of a sentence, but this is rarer and usually sounds stilted to Americans. Listen.
So that you feel less hungry, it helps to lower blood sugar.
One important note is that the word that is optional for so that in spoken English, so it may disappear. Here's how that sounds.
It helps to lower blood sugar so you feel less hungry.
But without that, how will you know that the meaning is in order to? One signal is that there is often a modal verb in the adverb clause. Modal verbs include can, could, may, might, will, and others. Here's how that might sound.
It helps to lower blood sugar so you can feel less hungry.
The modal verb in the adverb clause is can. Finally, let's discuss the phrasing so, adjective, or adverb that. This is different from both meanings we've talked about. To try to put it simply, it means to the level described. Here are some examples.
This morning, the construction was so loud that we could not sleep.
This means that the construction was loud to a level that prevented us from sleeping. In the phrase so, adjective, or adverb that, the word that begins a type of clause called a complement clause, but we will not talk about that in today's program. What's important today is knowing that the word that for this phrase is also optional and may disappear. Here's how it sounds.
This morning, the construction was so loud we could not sleep.
So, how might you know the meaning if that disappears? Well, you can listen for an adjective after so. The adjective in our example is loud. Now, we'll compare the three phrases. You will hear three sentences that sound similar but have different meanings.
He is funny, so his friends laugh at him.
The meaning here is, he is funny, therefore his friends laugh at him. Here's the next one.
He makes jokes so that his friends will laugh.
This means he makes jokes for the purpose of making his friends laugh. It answers the question, why does he make jokes? Notice the modal will in the adverb clause. Now for the last meaning.
He is so funny that his friends laugh at him.
It means he is funny to such a level that it makes his friends laugh at him. Now for one more set to help you examine the meanings.
She studied hard, so she was able to win a scholarship.
The meaning here is she studied hard, therefore she was able to win a scholarship. And the next one.
She studied hard so that she could win a scholarship.
It means she studied hard for the purpose of winning a scholarship. Again, you see a modal in the adverb clause, could. And lastly,
she studied so hard that she won a scholarship.
This means she studied hard to such a degree that she won a scholarship. You probably noticed that some examples other than those with so that have modal verbs. All three of today's phrases can have modals, but so that adverb clauses commonly have them. Well, we're so happy that you stayed around for today's program. Don't forget to do the practice so that you can remember what you learned. I'm Alice Bryant.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Calvin Coolidge. He was the vice president under Warren Harding. When Harding died suddenly, a little more than 2 years into his term, Coolidge became president. Coolidge is linked to two opposing ideas. The first idea is quiet restraint. The president's nickname was Silent Cal. He rarely took part in casual conversation. And as a leader, he often thought the best action was not to take any action. Many voters liked his cool style. Coolidge quickly earned a public image as a serious man who did not spend money or words easily. But Coolidge is also linked to a period in U.S. history known as the Roaring Twenties. In those years, the 1920s, the American economy was generally good. Many people spent money on exciting things, such as the still new automobile, and on entertainment, including alcoholic drinks, cigarettes, and dancing. Creative expression such as jazz and Art Deco architecture became popular. Calvin Coolidge is often given credit for helping fuel the Roaring Twenties with his pro-business economic policies. But some historians caution against remembering Coolidge's business freedom policies too fondly. They say he helped create the conditions for the severe economic depression that followed his presidency. Calvin Coolidge and his sister were born and raised on a farm in the northeast state of Vermont. Coolidge spoke highly of both his parents. His father owned a store and also held local political offices. He had a public image for honesty, public service, and thrift. Young Calvin Coolidge helped his father in the store and hoped to be just like him. Coolidge also admired his mother's strong character. He was 12 years old when she died, and he wrote that losing her was the greatest grief that can come to a boy. 6 years later, his sister also died. Their deaths made young Calvin Coolidge even more serious than he already was. But Coolidge was also known for his wit, a kind of humor that often depends on wordplay or intelligence. As a student at Amherst College in Massachusetts, Coolidge became known as an able and funny public speaker. That skill helped him rise in politics. He began with lower-level offices in Massachusetts and later served as that state's governor. Along the way, he married Grace Anna Goodhue, a teacher for the deaf. She was known to be warm and social, and the couple were reported to have a loving marriage. They went on to have two sons. In 1920, the Republican Party nominated Coolidge to be its vice presidential candidate. In general, voters liked the Republican ticket. They were ready for a change after the reform policies and international engagement of Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Sure enough, the Republicans won the election in a landslide. But Coolidge did not enjoy the office of vice president very much. He had little power in the government. During meetings, he often remained silent. One summer night, he and his wife were on vacation in Vermont. His father, Colonel Coolidge, woke them up in the middle of the night with some dramatic news. President Harding had died. Reporters quickly gathered at the small farmhouse. Colonel Coolidge had not put electricity in the house, so everyone watched by the light of an oil lamp. Colonel Coolidge was a public official. He used the family Bible and a copy of the Constitution to swear in his son as the 30th U.S. president. Then the country's new leader did a very sensible thing. He went back to bed. President Coolidge believed in limited government, especially limited federal government. He permitted state and cabinet officials to decide as many issues as they could. Coolidge used his authority to focus mostly on the country's economy. At the time he took office, the U.S. was at the start of an economic boom. Coolidge tried to maintain that prosperity. He did not regulate businesses too much, and he sharply reduced taxes, especially on the wealthy. By nearly every measure, the economy grew. But the policies also widened the divide between rich and poor Americans and put the country's economy in a risky situation. More and more people began to invest their money in the stock market. Some put their dollars in dangerous investments. And business owners produced more goods than most members of the public could really afford. Increasingly, people borrowed money on credit to pay for luxury goods. At the same time, the economic situation of many American farmers was getting worse. The weather had been unusually dry in some places, and the price of food was falling. Farmers asked the federal government for assistance. But Coolidge rejected several bills that might have helped them. The bills had other problems, Coolidge reasoned, and he did not think that the federal government should intervene in the situation. So the farmers continued to suffer. But most voters remained supportive of Coolidge. Even though the president was considered a quiet person, he spoke often on the radio, appeared in a talking film, met with reporters regularly, and posed in funny costumes for photographers. He easily won election in 1924. Historians believe he could have won another term, too, in 1928. But Coolidge chose not to seek office. Some believed he was too saddened by the death of his teenaged son. Shortly after Coolidge became president, the boy had been playing tennis and slightly wounded his toe. The wound became infected. The infection spread to the boy's blood. A few days later, he died. Although Coolidge continued his presidency, he later said the joy had gone from the job. But when he decided not to seek re-election, he did not talk about his feelings. Instead, he simply wrote a note to reporters saying, "I do not choose to run for president in 1928. His Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover, was elected instead. Coolidge retired to his home in Massachusetts and led a quiet private life. President Coolidge was well-liked by most Americans. Later presidents, including Ronald Reagan, sought to follow some of his economic policies. But many historians have questioned those policies. They say that Coolidge did not pay enough attention to the situation of farmers. And they say the stock market was rising too fast. 7 months after Coolidge left office, the U.S. economy collapsed. The country was still deep in the Great Depression when Coolidge passed away. He died, quietly, of course, during an afternoon nap at the age of 60. His will was but a single sentence.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.